Decades, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the Internet. The show is hosted by Felicia King of Quality Plus Consulting and airs the first and third Saturdays of every month.
Good morning, this is Felicia King, and you are listening to Breakfast Bites. My two topics for you today on the show has to do with healthcare.gov, which is, of course, you know, the Health and Human Services website, sometimes referred to as the Obamacare website. Been some very interesting things that have been brought to light by Epic and EFF, which, for those of you that don't know who those organizations are, they are the electronic privacy type organizations that have been around literally since about the dawn of the internet. And they are really phenomenal organizations that are very interested in privacy and security. So when they have something to say, it's important to stand up and take notice. So I'll talk about that. And then we will get into some very interesting topics about what you can do to fix the commonly found errors in your Windows infrastructure. So let's start off with healthcare.gov has been caught sending personal data to dozens of tracking websites. Now, I think you all know that it's actually pretty common for websites to have embedded advertisement refer tracking links. Now, my website doesn't have any of that garbage in there because I just... I rail against it. Basically, I just vehemently disagree with those sorts of strategies. I don't have a website for the purposes of having a click-through, refer-type advertisement-generated income off my website. That isn't the purpose of having the website. For me, I have qualityplusconsulting.com, and I maintain the content on there mostly as an educational tool for all of you so that you can be more successful in your IT endeavors, whether they be home user endeavors or large-scale infrastructure endeavors. So again, because I'm a privacy and security-oriented person, I just reject all of this click-through garbage, and that's why you don't see any advertisements on my website. Now, the other nice thing about websites that don't have any advertisements is you don't have malvertisements, and we certainly covered that in depth on a previous show. If you want to listen to that show and check out the links associated with that show, just go to qualityplusconsulting.com and locate the section on the Breakfast Bites podcasts, and you will see the show for malvertisements listed there. So once, usually you look at a website and you say, okay, well, let's say it's yahoo.com. Okay, so Yahoo's going to have their own advertisements. They're going to have advertisements from someplace else. Now, whenever you actually have advertisements, you know there's going to be some sort of tracking cookies going on, and there are some things you can do to kill those tracking cookies. A trend worry-free business security services properly configured is one of those things that can kill those tracking cookies. Using Internet Explorer with a restricted trusted sites configuration can also give you quite a bit of enhanced privacy. You can even use a private browsing method, which will help you with that. You could use proxy anonymizers. Another option is your perimeter security appliance could actually have cookie stripping, whacking capabilities in it for all of this tracking garbage, and so that it would actually strip that stuff out before it would ever even have a chance in heck of getting to your workstation. And another option is a customized host file. And so you may be asking the question, well, you know, Felicia, what do you do? Well, I do all of the above. Because why not? I mean, if you can have multiple layers of security, why wouldn't you? So for those people out there that are not as security savvy as myself, then the problem you're faced with is you maybe want to go to healthcare.gov and sign up, except, lo and behold, Your personally identifiable information is being sent to dozens of tracking websites. Yep. And this is really disturbing to me. It's not just disturbing to me, it's disturbing to the people at the Electronic Frontier Foundation, but also to Epic and other security researchers that were contacted about this particular thing. One really has to wonder, what on earth does protected health information and protected personally identifiable information have to do with tracking, third-party external tracking? I mean, you would think that these are mutually exclusive. Common sense says, if you are going to visit a website for, oh, let's say, Aurora Healthcare or United Healthcare or, you know, insert various medical practitioner there, that their website would be constructed such that it is HIPAA compliant, meaning that your PII and PHI were not being disclosed to third parties in any way, shape, size, or flavor. Because one of the things that HIPAA says you need to comply with IT security standards and best practices. And there's a lot of IT security standards and best practices that have to do with common sense. And common sense says, well, I think that we should be reducing the attack profile or the opportunity for data to leak to third parties or unauthorized parties that really have no business having this data. Now, I'm thinking to myself, here's healthcare.gov. It is a government-funded website. This is not supposed to be a for-profit organization. It is inherently a website that is directly plugged into your Social Security data, your IRS data, your CMS data, your private insurer data, as they are linked in. There's all kinds of companies and very sensitive databases that are plugged into this healthcare.gov website. So why on earth did anyone ever construct this thing to have anything to do with click tracking and third-party refer tracking, like for Akamai, Chartbeat, Clicktail, DoubleClick, Google, MathTag, Mixpanel, Optimizely, Reason 8, RFI Hub, Twitter, Yahoo, YouTube? What does this have to do with your healthcare.gov login and the information that you have there? Well, the short answer is that it absolutely has nothing to do with it, except really underhanded, dirty tricks. And it has kind of a smell of inappropriate undue influence on the behalf of these information broker people tracker websites, such as YouTube and Twitter and Yahoo and Facebook. Now, there is a something that you can do quite easily. If you have Firefox, you can actually install Privacy Badger. And Privacy Badger is a new and free tool that you can have as a plugin directly into Firefox. And it helps you to just block this garbage. There's another thing I will tell you about that is really, really super valuable information here. A lot of this is based upon this information leakage is based upon you go to a website, the website gives you a cookie. you go to another website, that other website inspects other cookies that you have on your computer as well as the information contained therein, the cookie. Now, I've done other podcasts and radio shows on cookie management, and I would definitely encourage you to check those out. I even published an article on how to use CookieWall. CookieWall is a very nice free cookie management utility that I still use, and I think it's very handy. However, there are two other tools that I find to be exceptionally valuable. And they are both available at nirsoft.net. That is NIRSOFT.net. So at nirsoft.net, you will find two very amazing tools. I mean, there's actually a whole bunch of very nice tools there. But one of them is IE Cookies View, which is a cookie viewer and cookie management utility for Internet Explorer. And then there is a cookie management tool also for Mozilla Firefox. Fantastic tools. So if what you're trying to do is you say, well, okay, I've got to go to this healthcare.gov website and I want to try to reduce as much as possible my protected health information and my personally identifiable information from getting leaked to these unauthorized third parties. And as far as I'm concerned, they're unauthorized because you didn't consent to that. I mean, you didn't like say, oh yes, I would like to have my information shared with every third party information broker on the planet so that they can create personal tracking profiles off of me and sell it as an advertising profile and make money off of it. I mean, that's effectively somebody taking your identity and your attributes and making money off of it. And you didn't consent to that. I mean, I find it really quite reprehensible. So what can you do about it? Well, you can manage your cookies. You can block the cookies. You can block access to those naughty sites in general. If you want the actual link to a couple of the articles associated with this, check out qualityplusconsulting.com. Look for the Breakfast Bites podcast associated with this topic and date. And you will find in the EFF article, it shows the list of naughty domains. And some of those are a little easier to block than others. And you'll see what I mean with that when you look at it. However, any which way you slice it, you can download and utilize the tools from nirsoft.net. And you can use CookieWall. CookieWall only works with Internet Explorer. It does not work with Firefox. Also, Internet Explorer is a more secure browser in that it allows you to create trusted sites zones. That's one way to deal with it. You could get Privacy Badger for Firefox. I'm not aware of tools for Chrome out there. I'm sure that they exist. It may even be that Privacy Badger is actually quite fairly new. It may be that they come out with a tool for Chrome as well. So I hope that gives you some ideas about what it is that you can immediately do in order to address these particular cookie privacy breach issues, which I find to be just completely unacceptable. I just want to reiterate that if it's a government-funded website, why is there any cookie tracking on it at all that goes to third parties? I mean, I could understand where the website needs to know who you are as you browse around in the website, but that should be a session cookie exclusively with healthcare.gov and no one else. So it's just the way, there are just an abundance of ways in which the story around the development, maintenance, and the ongoing construction of healthcare.gov is just dubious. So, let's move on to the next topic, which has to do with just issues that I think are completely preventable that IT managers could be fixing on their own if they had a clue about what to look for. And I happen to have a just an astronomical level of experience doing reverse engineering and auditing, because I do approximately 2 to 3 full audits per month on different organizations. And I mean, that's a lot of different organizations. And I'm also involved in the correction of a wide variety of issues that crop up in those organizations. And so because of my experience, I know I have this huge database in my mind of what settings work in what scenarios, and what settings are clearly suboptimal, what settings will cause a distinct and immediate problems, or latent, sneaking, hidden problems that can be difficult to identify. And I think most IT managers don't have that breadth and depth of knowledge and experience. And so the challenge that they face is when they're looking at the settings of their environment, it's hard to discern what's wrong, what is suboptimal, and because they just don't have that breadth of depth of experience. And in many cases, you could not really be all that successful by looking at simply an Active Directory design book or looking at best practices guides. They require an awful lot of interpretation and subjective interpretation by very highly experienced Active Directory architects like myself. So what I have done to try to make your lives a little bit easier here is to put together a high-level list of things that I pretty much always run into whenever I'm doing an audit. And I'm not even really going to go into network infrastructure here, because that is a whole nother show unto itself. I mean, auditing network infrastructure is intense. Very, very detailed. And it is very, very unique per organization and per their linkages and all kinds of things like that. So that's just an enormous amount of subjectiveness. Whereas with Active Directory, I can definitely give you a list of things that just are always wrong. So like, if you see this, you know it's wrong. And that's a lot easier to work with in terms of, I give you this list of things to check and some guidelines on it, and you go into your environment and you look at, oh my gosh, I've got that. Then at least you've got some sense about, oh, maybe I should go look up some articles about that and learn more about that and find out how to correct this in my infrastructure, or reach out to somebody that can help you if you don't feel comfortable with that. So a lot of the things that I'm going to tell you are improvements, and you may be thinking to yourself, well, you know, I don't really have any problems because things aren't broken. Well, I would argue that, yeah, things actually might be broken, and you have no clue that they're broken. I still run into, just all the time, I run into infrastructures that do not have proper monitoring set up. I mean, like, I can tell you, for example, in the last 10 years, and I mean, this is a lot of environments I've looked at in the last 10 years. So in the last 10 years, I have yet to see one that actually was properly monitoring for events that affect Active Directory authentication. And for example, one of those events would have to do with whether or not your domain controllers are advertising as authoritative time servers for the domain. Well, if they're not advertising as authoritative time servers for the domain, then you've got a problem on your hands. You've got probably a default setting in place that's just a giant, enormous single point of failure, where the only time server that you actually have that's advertising as a time server is your PDC, and that is not a scalable solution whatsoever. So a lot of the problems that I find, they are existing because an organization started out as a tiny little organization, and it then grew and grew and grew and grew, and there was maybe a little fixing around the edges and scaling and things like that, but nobody's really come in and done a full analysis of, does this design actually still make sense for the size of our infrastructure? And it, I would argue that now is the time. Revisit this. So you can start with your DNS, and I think it's absolutely essential to start with DNS, and that is because if you're having a problem with Active Directory, there's really two primary causations for Active Directory having problems. One is DNS being messed up, whether we're talking about the DNS settings and ordering on the TCP/IP adapter for each one of the domain controllers, or the zone configurations themselves, or the way that they're replicating or not replicating. So it's DNS. And then the other big matzo ball is the sites and services configuration. I oftentimes find where the IP site links in sites and services are not correctly configured so that what the sites and services configuration is showing is something more appropriate to an underlying mesh network topology, whereas the real network topology is actually hub and spoke. So if there's a disconnect between your actual real network design and what Active Directory sites and services IP site links is actually telling the knowledge consistency checker, the KCC, to calculate, then what will happen is as the KCC runs, it will calculate out based upon what it thinks is the site topology based upon the information you've given it. And you will end up with replication failures. And it's really ugly. So this is really crucially important that you have a, you figure out what all of your subnets are. You figure out what all your sites are. You have correct correlation between sites and subnets, and you literally draw out on a piece of paper or in Visio or something, Visio is even better, what is your real network layer topology in terms of branch office VPN tunnels, site-to-site links of any shape, size, flavor, what does that look like? So if you have like an underlying hub and spoke configuration, well, then you have to create individual IP site links literally as specifications in sites and services. Now, I'm not talking about replication objects here. If you think you're smarter than KCC, then you're really barking up the wrong tree. The one exception to that I will say is if you have put read-only domain controllers in your infrastructure, you will find that the replication objects to read-only domain controllers do not always auto-create. And I'm not a big fan of read-only domain controllers anyhow. I mean, the exception might be if you are a primarily U.S.-based organization and your remote locations are in foreign countries where they're kind of remote offices and they don't have a significant IT infrastructure. In that case, then I would think that a read-only domain controller might actually be appropriate for those locations. But in general, read-only domain controllers can be somewhat more difficult. I'm not going to say problematic because they work, but they can make certain things more difficult because you have to understand that the way that you have to manage them is different than managing writable domain controllers. Interesting little side note with this, there are some very specific guidelines for global catalog server settings as well. And I oftentimes find where not all domain controllers are global catalog servers. And there is a specification, if you look up the actual documentation on this, it basically says, number one, you either need to know exactly what you're doing and have a very clear plan and design for Active Directory in place that addresses how you have a bridgehead per site, and the bridgehead is, at least the bridgehead, is a global catalog. Or you just say, okay, forget it. make them all global catalog servers. And I would argue that we're in the day and age now where just forget it, make them all global catalog servers, and that includes read-only domain controllers. The reason I would argue that is because we're no longer dealing with crazy small IP site links like you decided to put a domain controller in Moscow and the only connectivity you have to it is some sort of 56K modem. I mean, we really just don't live in that day and age anymore. Number one, people are not putting domain controllers in crazy remote locations with tiny, tiny, tiny network connections anymore. We're doing things differently. So if you're going to have a server there, it tends to be that there is some level of an appropriate network connectivity to that thing. And so you don't have to be totally spastic about how much data you're replicating to that thing anymore. I mean, one of the whole deals with, oh, well, don't have it be a global catalog server, because if you're trying to replicate the global catalog to that domain controller, well, that could be enormous. Yeah, absolutely. If you've got a domain with 39,000 users, you're probably in the realm of millions of objects in Active Directory at that point. And sure, that's a lot of stuff to replicate. However, for organizations like that, don't you think that they have appropriate network connectivity? Yeah, they do. And they're certainly not going to put a server someplace where they don't have appropriate network connectivity. So this whole argument about like not having global catalog servers everywhere is, I think, just not really a valid argument for the vast majority of organizations anymore. So when you're looking at DNS, you need to look at scavenging. That is a huge issue that I find. People will turn scavenging on at the zone level, but they neglect to actually look at the scavenging settings on a per-server basis. And there's a component of your scavenging settings that are at the zone for each zone, mind you. They have to be checked, and that includes for every PTR zone as well. But also you have to click and select to analyze whether or not the scavenging settings are enabled and are they correctly set per each DNS server. You have to realize that with DNS, your zones replicate, but the server-level settings are not going to replicate. Now, other server-level settings that you absolutely must interrogate correctly and make sure that they are set correctly has to do with forwarders, start of authority records, name servers. I've seen circumstances where not all domain controllers in a domain were actually listed as authorized name servers for a zone. Well, that just doesn't make any sense at all. So clearly, if you've got a situation like that, then you pretty much got a problem on your hands you need to fix. Interestingly enough, I still find problems with root hints, because either somebody has exclusively relied upon root hints and they don't have any forwarders specified, or they have done interesting things with the root hints settings for a DNS server. Now, I would argue that there is a circumstance where you may want to avoid utilizing some certain root hints servers, but now we're really getting into the technical weeds and I don't really want to go there. You also then, with regards to DNS, you need to look at SRV records for all of the things that Active Directory needs in order to function properly. And make sure that those SRV records are there. Now, with regards to your external DNS, this can be, most of the time what I find is a problem with external DNS and in combination with internal DNS is if the internal DNS zone and the external DNS zone are identical, you're going to run into some issues there. It can be handled, but you're going to definitely run into some issues there, and you need to be cognizant about the management of that. Now, on the other hand, if you have a situation where the internal zone and the external zone are different, that also has some implications that you need to be aware of, especially if you're internally hosting your website or you're internally hosting Exchange or something like that. But unfortunately, I am out of time for today, and I will have to table this, and this is, I think, a pretty vigorous discussion about these things. So I will probably pick this up as another show, and we'll go from there. And I'm going to try and put this little